The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Where do you go for comics new and old?
Garage sales?
Wrong! Where do you see your favorite television and movie stars?
In magazines, mostly.
Wrong again! And where do you go to see the best in cosplay?
Well, there are lots of different options if you're looking for something...
So incredibly wrong! Wizard World Comic Con. Wizard World Comic Con offers live entertainment and gaming, comics new and old, cosplay, toys and memorabilia, and a chance to meet your favorite television and movie stars. Meet Doctor Who star David Tennant and Lord of the Rings star Elijah Wood June 1st through the 3rd in Des Moines, Iowa. Then meet Aquaman Jason Momoa and Luke Cage's Mike Coulter June 8th through the 10th in Columbus, Ohio. For news, celebrity updates, and tickets to future shows, go to wizardworld.com. Don't feel like paying full price? No problem. Use promo code CANDAIR at checkout to get 10% off your tickets. So, where are you going to go for your pop culture fix?
The internet?
Oh, good answer.
Really?
No! Wizard World Comic Con.
Go to wizardworld.com for tickets.
Rangers, this is Zordon. It's time for another episode of the Canned Air Podcast.
All right. It's monster time. Go, go, Power
Rangers! Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Canned Air, your tribute to comics and pop culture. I'm Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
I'm Jake Runyon.
And joining us today, returning to the show, actually, I think this visit to the show gets him a free sub, if I am correct. But here to talk about his new book, Oddities, that just came out. You probably know him best, though, as Zordon from the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. We welcome back David J. Fielding. David, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me on, Panda.
Oh, nice. I love it. I love it. We have a good show lined up for you today. We're going to be in our retro roundtable doing what we, I think, do best when we have David on the show, and that's just talk our superhero movies that have come out since we last had him on, which was August of 2016. So
it's been a bit.
Yeah, we got a lot to cover.
I just wish we had more to discuss. You know, it's such a barren field, these films.
And then we're going to be turning our attention over to David to talk about his new book, Oddities, which I am excited.
Absolutely.
Excited to talk about. So, but before we do all that, Jake.
You should probably head on down to Twitter, where you can find @CannedAirPod, giving you all the latest episodes, funny pictures, jokes, and assorted strange musings. Also on Instagram, @canned_air, serving much the same purpose. Much the same purpose. And if you like what we do, head on down to Patreon. Throw a couple of bucks a month our way, hit that $5 or more mark, and you have access to the Founders Club exclusive Patreon podcast.
Yes, sir. And Canned Air is now getting you that 10% off your Wizard World tickets once again.
Finally, the stars align.
Yeah. So what's the next show, Jack?
Des Moines, Iowa, coming up. It will be, this coming weekend by the time this posts? And then Columbus the weekend after that. So
If you plan on going to either of those shows, at checkout on wizardworld.com, use Canned Air, no space. I think it's all caps now, right?
Yeah, they fixed it.
Yeah, so just Canned Air, all caps, no space. Get that cool 10% off.
Escape your tragic existence in Des Moines, Iowa for at least a couple days with the help of Canned Air.
You're welcome. So with that, let's kick off our retro round table.
I am preparing a platinum night.
Cowabunga!
What have we to come up? That's like...
All right. I am super stoked to have this conversation.
So movies. Not a fan.
Right. And I
especially comic book movies.
I must warn people, there are probably going to be spoilers all throughout this, as that's I imagine we're going to be talking Deadpool 2 and Infinity War. So you've been warned. So let's start off by just asking David, I guess, you know, since August 2016, what's been your favorite superhero movie to be released?
The ones from 2016 till now, I'll probably say with Black Panther.
Good choice.
Absolutely.
You know, it was, I mean, because it's, you know, it's something that's has been long overdue, and it was really fun and really well put together, and just, it was just a joy to watch that movie. I think that's my favorite since the last time we talked.
I'd have to probably agree. It's right up there as one of mine as well. And the one thing it did right, which I think, well, one of the many things it did right, not the one thing it did right, but one of the many things it did right, which is the same thing that Infinity War did, was they made an amazing villain. They made a villain that you can relate to that just isn't hell-bent on power or something. Right. You know, you can put yourself in those shoes and relate.
Any story of that ilk, I mean, your hero is only as good as your villain. And when your villain is that, you know, well-defined and his game is right up there in the top, it just elevates the hero. And Killmonger as a character was, you know, completely justified in his reasons for doing what he did. I mean, you know, he was still a murderer and a violent, almost tyrannical leader, but I mean, you understood his motivations. You understood why. Mm-hmm. And that's the other great thing about Black Panther for me is that it's very Shakespearean. I mean, it's you know, royalty and family drama, and it was just really, really you know, they elevated the game with that movie.
They really did.
Absolutely. And you know, I think one of my favorite things about the movie is that it could have fallen apart so many times. The way it was marketed, the way things developed, it could have easily become this divisive thing where you've got people accusing it of one thing on the other and saying, oh, it's just this, it's just that. But everyone could kind of agree. It was unanimous, like, guys, this is really good. You know, and I think that's the biggest triumph is people talk about what a cultural move forward this is. And it totally is. And that's because it's such a good movie in its own right.
Sure.
That it's able to attain that. You know, you can't manufacture something like that.
Right.
Even if that's your intent, you've got to be sure the movie itself is solid. And it totally was.
And when you were watching Infinity War and they, you know, Captain America's like, you know, I know somewhere we can go. And they go to Wakanda. I mean,
and the music kicks in. You're
didn't
like,
you just get so excited?
Yeah. I mean, yes.
There's still something about Black Panther that I didn't like very much. And I don't know what it is. Well, I kind of know what it is, but it's the technology, the spaceships flying around. And I know that Wakanda is like technologically super advanced.
Mm-hmm.
But something, maybe it's because of
too much.
It had to have been because of, you saw Guardians with all the spaceships and stuff, and then Ragnarok.
Sure.
They're flying around in ships, and then you get Black Panther. It just, I don't know, didn't sit well with me. It was a good movie. The story was good. Loved all the characters in it, but just something about that movie.
Hmm. Well, I mean, I guess I can kind of see what you're saying.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't experience that feeling with this movie, but the Iron Man suit in Infinity War kind of bugged me. I mean, the whole nanotechnology it just kind of appears, and I don't know. I enjoyed the old kind of clunky Transformer, you know, suit coming on him. It just seems too easy to
do the nanobots. There's something kind of viscerally satisfying about overlapping metal plates, you know?
What is it? I don't know.
It just feels right.
I wondered when they were going to get into the nano, because his suit is nano now, like with the...
What I find interesting about Tony Stark and these movies is that I forget the name of the term that they use for computer chip manufacturing, but I mean, you know, it doubles every 2 years, to make it smaller, make it faster, make it better.
Sure.
And Tony seems to keep pace with that. I mean, every time you see him, he's got something new. He's always advancing it. But I was very weary of Stark Tech like 6 movies ago. It's like, does everything have to be Stark Tech?
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, he's a cornerstone of the MCU universe, so it makes sense that his stuff kind of bleeds over into everything else. But I mean, I get it. I mean, where's the sort of explanation of where this stuff comes from? And it's just the blanket magic statement of, well, Tony made it.
Right. Oh, yeah.
He's always down in his basement tinkering right. around yeah. making new stuff.
You know, I hope I don't give the impression that I don't like the suit, because the suit was cool.
Oh, yeah.
For
yeah.
sure. But, yeah, I don't know. There's something about it.
It loses something. I think...
I just hated the whole slow-mo scene where he's looking into the camera and takes his glasses off just in time for the helmet to form around his eyes. I'm like, ah, come on.
I'll tell you what I thought was really clever, though. I think I may have mentioned this before. I liked in the Thanos fight on the ruins of Titan... when his suit was getting obliterated, just pierced yeah. and blasted, excuse me, and he was drawing those nanites or whatever they were from different parts of his body to patch up the holes, mm-hmm. had this kind of desperate reactive defense thing. I thought that was a nice touch because it really heightened the tension.
Right.
You're like, he's not invulnerable all the way around anymore. You see all these little weaknesses opening up.
And sure.
It was a cool way to utilize that idea cinematically,
mm-hmm.
even if it's, you know, they could have achieved the same thing just by blowing off chunks of his old armor.
You know? Right.
You know what's kind of funny is Ryan Reynolds got so much crap being a Green Lantern and his suit being all CG, and I don't know if it was practical at all on
I can't imagine there Iron was too Man's much suit. That was physically there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No.
But well, nobody has really said anything about, well, here's a fake Iron Man suit.
I'm sure any CG. Of the scenes where he's out of his helmet are probably actual real suits. But, yeah, for sure. I mean, that whole scene I was just mentioning.
Yeah.
Since we're already on the topic, I got to ask David, what'd you think of Infinity War?
I loved it. I've seen it twice. The first time I sat through it, it didn't feel like 3 hours at all. It just went by, and, you know, you were so sucked into it. And I saw it on the Thursday night before it officially opened. I know that it had opened like a week before in England, and there were other previews in L.A. and something like that. But where I'm at, it opened like the Thursday night before the official Friday opening. So I saw it that night, and I saw it with a fairly large crowd in the theater, and it was great to, you know, to be in a theater with... you know, fans of the franchise, and it's the first time in a long time that I've been in the theater where the audience vocally reacted to things that were happening in the movie. That last 25-minute sequence was just one gasp after the other of things that were happening. And yeah. and I was going to say, you know, in relation to Black Panther, I think that the storytelling and the script for Infinity War, you know, took some of that grandeur, that Shakespearean consequence-heavy stuff and put that into the story. And Infinity War couldn't have happened without the long road leading up to it, you know, these right. 10 years, these 16 films leading up to this thing. And having followed it all the way through and sit there in the theater and to see the culmination of that was really a great experience, you know, to just be in the moment with that. And it was done really well as far as the way these movies have trained you to think that, you know, the heroes will always triumph. You know, they'll get to a point where things get really, really low mm-hmm. and you don't think, you know, they're going to make it. And, you know, then they finally do. And they kind of did that with this movie. They kind of led you up to the point where like, oh, you know, oh, they're going to rescue it. And then smacked you right in the face with no, it's not going to happen that way. And I thought it ended on an appropriately WTF moment, and you know, and people are like, we can't wait a year for Avengers 4.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny you say, you know, a 3-hour movie and you're captivated the whole time. It's funny how at the end of that 3 hours, when you do see those credits, you're like, oh,
no,
what?
No,
already?
No, no.
Well, already? How yeah. is this possible?
Yeah. But
I just love what that movie did for Thanos. I mean, everyone is saying this is Thanos's movie, and it
and for good
definitely
reason.
Is. But it's the first time where I've liked what the movie has really done a lot more than the comic, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It's. I think it explores those same concepts. Mm-hmm. It does it in a very... streamlined isn't the word, because I feel like that kind of suggests they took elements away from it, but
cheapened,
like,
it a little bit.
Yeah, a very logical, kind of easy to digest fashion, you know, without all of the sort of comic bits and pieces you get with manipulation of this and time and reality, where I think in a lot of comic storylines, things tend to get a little convoluted.
Mm-hmm. You know, they just how they made his wiping out half of existence seem like this is my life's work.
Yeah.
This is what I'm passionate about. I'm carrying this burden that no one else can, where in the comic, it's just like, hey, I'll kill half of existence to impress you, babe.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah. It dignifies it,
yeah,
in a really unsettling way, because you walk away from it, you're like, oh man, I don't know if I disagree with him,
mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with Killmonger. It's, I think...
Exactly.
Heroes and villains, like, in terms of story, they all sprout from the same seed, the same type of person, the same set of attributes. You introduce loss, and then their reaction to that loss determines whether they're a hero or a villain, and the best villains are the ones who believe they are the heroes. Your Killmonger, your Thanos, mm-hmm. the ones who are just trying to right what they perceive as these great wrongs. And God,
in which sometimes best. In Killmonger's case, I mean, definitely was dude. Wrong. The dude was wrong. Like, he had every right to
was
be as mad
not
as he did.
Fair. Yeah, he I can't imagine away, but... a scenario where I wouldn't react the same way, assuming I was some perfectly physically fit, you know,
sure.
expert mercenary with 100 confirmed kills. Instead of a doughy nerd.
Speaking to that, I mean, I saw a bunch of people online and on Twitter and on message boards and stuff who are really giving Star-Lord a lot of crap for you know, what happens on Titan. Yeah. And, you know, I disagree with that notion that Star-Lord screwed the pooch for everybody. I thought he acted completely within character. And if it had been anybody else, they would have reacted the same way. And them hollering about Star-Lord, you know, not being able to maintain his cool, it's like, yeah, but Tony didn't maintain his cool during Civil War either. So, you know, when it's your family member, when it's a blood relative, when it's somebody you love and care for deeply, and that happens, you're not thinking straight. You're just not.
Yeah, his dad killed his mom. He watched his mom die. He had to kill his dad.
Yeah.
His stepdad, Yondu, he died right in front of him, too.
Okay, I mean,
now the love of his life.
He pulled the trigger on Gamora. He was going to kill her.
Yeah.
And then Thanos turns, you know, everything into bubbles. And you know, for him to be ready to do that and then learn that Thanos turned around and did it himself, his whole, you know, reason for existence is shattered.
Yeah.
It's absolutely not out of character. Hmm. Yeah, I have to agree. People are acting like it's this big stretch.
Try to put yourself in those shoes. Tell me you wouldn't do the same thing.
And the other thing, like, in defense of his actions is Doctor Strange saw this happening. This is the one, right? Mm-hmm. The one reality where they come out on top. So he's like, all right, no, he's going to do this, but that's all going to play into the final result. So everything's kind of happening the way it should.
Sure.
You know, it's not like if he hadn't done that, they would have won. It was never going to play out that way.
And let me just comment on that particular scene that we're talking about where, you know, Star-Lord goes crazy and is hitting him in the face. Yeah. Mantis is trying to subdue him. That scene
and
is
to get
just...
the glove off. They actually get the glove off, which is awesome.
Yes. Yep. That scene is gorgeous. I mean, not only what they've constructed, but the CG work.
Oh,
when it's close up on him, like when he's baring his teeth and like looking into his
it's
mouth.
It's real.
Yeah.
It's human.
It looks real. It is so good.
And I know a lot of people are talking about his skin tone and the shape of his face kind of moving away from that really comic book true Thanos we saw like at the end of the first Avengers.
Big purple monkey.
They wouldn't have been able to pull off a scene like that if they had kept it. The fact that it was so much closer to Josh Brolin's face, the emotion was there.
God,
you know?
It was good.
And man, what an awesome illustration of just the power of this entity that scene was. You know, where you see people that you have been told like, oh, these guys, these are the ones that get things done. These are the heroes. They're the guardians of the galaxy, not guardians of the state. You know, that's a big territory. And they're struggling.
Right.
And it, oh, God, so good.
If anything, I'd have blamed Mantis for not being able to hold him down.
Yeah.
Keeping his mind in check the whole
get
time.
Get it together, Mantis.
If you really want to get down to it, if you want to blame somebody, blame Bruce Banner.
Yeah, no shit. Tell me about it.
I love what they did with, you know, the Hulk and sort of like kind of taking him out of the equation. Because up until that point, the Hulk is the end game, right? I mean, you know, if you want things to end, bring in the Hulk. And to remove him within the first 10 minutes of the movie and you know, not allow him to come into play, I thought that was great. You know, and just... You know, the Hulk being afraid for the first time was pretty awesome.
You know, that's a very interesting point. I never looked at it like
that. Kind of had to do it to up the stakes.
Well, I was always kind of like, I was thinking since the movie, why'd they take the Hulk out? I want to see the Hulk. And I just thought, well, maybe they're just building up to something better. But it's that's the truth. You can't have that much power at your disposal all the time when you're taking on something like
this.
He's
the nuclear option.
You know? Right.
I didn't think and it's a great... triple moment for us as fans watching it, because in the first Avengers movie, the Hulk, you know, takes Loki to task and slams him down into the earth 5 or 6 times and walks away, and does the same thing with Thor and Ragnarok, and then it gets done to him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can see, oh, you know, he shrivels up a little bit from that, so.
Yeah, and like when you see the Hulk in the beginning take after him, and the Ebony Maw was like, let him have his fun.
Yeah, just not a threat.
Yeah, it's just like, uh-oh.
And he takes that punch right on the chin, and the Hulk whimpers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the first time I was like, oh, no. You know, it's one of those things that really hits
you. And you know, that really had to hurt, because Hulk has been smacked in the face with, you know, Thor's hammer. And that's, you know, that's not something you shrug off lightly. And so... Wow.
Those were precision punches, too.
Oh, like, yeah, every one of them was awesome.
Like, in the side, like, in his kidneys and shit. Like, he was really working him over. It was really good.
Thanos is a pugilist.
You raise a great point about the Hulk. But one thing that I dislike about it was just how Bruce Banner, in that move, kind of became a comic relief.
They leaned a little heavy into that.
Yeah.
And I wasn't big on that aspect. And that kind of bled over from Thor Ragnarok, which, another perfect movie, if
it
you
was
ask me.
Thematically ideal for Ragnarok.
They figured out what to do with the Thor movies, because those first two were not doing it for me. Right.
Ragnarok.
Yeah, I think I would have liked rather had Bruce working with Shuri, trying to get the Mind Stone off of Vision, rather than putting him on the front lines in the suit. I mean, you know, Bruce is supposed to be up there mentally and you know, intelligence wise, up there with, you know, Reed Richards and Tony Stark as far as like being genius level. So get him in there, you know, doing what he does best rather than, you know, turning him into a punching bag.
Yeah, right. I hadn't thought about that. You've got these dual aspects where you've got the brilliant scientist, the unstoppable physical brute. They take away the brute instead of saying, okay, let's focus on the scientist aspect. They're like, let's see if we can compensate for the loss of the brute by putting him in armor. It's like, no, you're wasting half of what makes this character great.
I mean, I understand why they did it. I understood, you know, it was sort of a fan service moment to bring the Hulkbuster back and all that kind of thing. Sure. And, it, you know, action-wise, it was very cool. But I think it was a little bit of a disservice to the character.
Agreed.
Especially in Age of Ultron, they kept calling Stark and Banner like the Science Brothers,
because
they made Ultron, then when he comes back and Tony's just like, "Oh my God, Bruce is back!" You're like, "Yes, the Science Brothers are back together," and then that was really
no science.
Yeah,
the first Avengers was on television the other night, and I watched some of it, and it's amazing how much these characters have evolved and changed since that movie, and I just was really gravitating toward Bruce Banner a lot more in that movie than I was in Infinity War. You know, he seemed not a different character, but there's definitely a different tone happening.
They really had a handle on him in the first event. And I was, if I'm not mistaken, it was Edward Norton before that. And then Avengers was the first time we see Mark Ruffalo.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
And I remember thinking to myself, like, oh, it's going to be kind of weird. No, it wasn't weird. I was like, this is the Hulk. This is Bruce Banner.
Brooke has trouble seeing Mark Ruffalo as Bruce Banner. Yeah. She can't get behind it. And I don't know. I've thoroughly enjoyed him. Yeah. I like him better than Edward Norton. I love Edward Norton.
Don't get me wrong.
And that
I don't
was
know
a good
if
movie.
I liked him in that role.
Let me ask you something. Because when I look at lists of movies from the MCU... is that movie, the Edward Norton Hulk, considered one of like the MCU lineup? Because they doesn't.
Yes,
the,
it is.
It is?
Yeah.
It was the first one, I think, wasn't it?
Oh, it was the second one after Iron Man.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, because at the end of the Hulk, Tony Stark shows up.
Yeah, that's right.
That's like, right.
Tony, you always wear such nice suits, you know?
I see. Yeah, you're right. I've only ever seen the Hulk all the way through in the theater.
I actually like the Edward Norton Hulk. I think it's a great, it's a great character movie. Oh, yeah. The music is great. The Hulk theme, I wish they would use more in the music for the other films. I wish they would bring it back because Craig Armstrong's music that he did for that movie is really, really good. But as far as the Hulk, Ed Norton's Hulk versus Mark Ruffalo's Hulk, I think they got better at making the Hulk look more like the Hulk. You know, in the Ed Norton, still the skin still looks odd or whatever, and he was less, as Tony calls him in the Avengers, he was, you know, the Mark Ruffalo version is less the big green rage monster than the Edward Norton one was, because the Edward Norton one really is more like a monster Hulk rather than the man Hulk, I guess, if you can make that distinction or whatever.
The one that can eventually be somewhat controlled.
Yeah.
One thing I miss from the first Hulk is when he would get more mad, he would grow.
You're talking not the Edward Norton Hulk, no, but the one first before Hulk. Like the more pissed off we get. Like he was like two stories tall at one point.
I loved that, how he got more mad.
I dug it
get
too,
bigger.
But I don't think when you're storytelling, you know, like especially in the case of like Infinity War, it's like, let's just keep pissing him off until he's like three times his size. And it's
like an infinitely scalable.
But
Hulk then consumed the world, solving all of its problems.
It's the size of Galactus.
And him and Galactus go toe-to-toe, right?
Yeah. Just a big punching match. You know, if you don't mind me taking us back and then by doing so in a different direction, you're talking about like the precision punches of Thanos.
Mm-hmm.
I want to chalk that up to Josh Brolin, who I think has been awesome in every role he's played in recent Marvel movies, because he's got that body language that works for that type of character, you know, punching with Thanos. And there's a scene in the second Deadpool I always think of when he's busting into the icebox, where he kicks open a door, and with this, like, really contemptuous flick of the wrist, he just chucks a grenade into the room. Mm. And he's just standing there. Like, the motion's just like, you know, it's nothing to him. He's taken so many lives. And it just had that same Thanos vibe where I was like, this is a being that has been unchallenged for a long time, you know? And I think he's the one who makes that happen. So, perfect casting.
I still have a hard time.
I think it's only recently that I realized, you know, how Josh is not as tall as everybody else.
No, he isn't.
He's only like, what, 5'9", 5'10", or something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
So, for him to, like, be somebody like Thanos, who's like 15 feet tall, and then take on Cable, which, you know, was awesome to see. I think in the comic he's taller than Deadpool, but in the movie he's head shorter or something.
They didn't even mention that in Deadpool. He's like actually just like 5'9". He's not 6'7".
Not like in the comics.
Four. Yeah.
No, I didn't catch that one.
Yeah,
it was
hilarious.
Well, since we've already begun to touch on it, David, what'd you think of Deadpool 2?
I laughed a lot. I really loved the first Deadpool movie. There are a lot of things I really enjoyed about Deadpool 2, but I liked Deadpool 1 better.
I think I might agree.
I think that's because I'm not sure if the budget served them well. You know, they got more money for the second one, and they did more with it, and there's lots more special effects and fights and stuff. But Deadpool 1 was so fun, and the way it was, the story was presented, you know, in sort of flashback, back and forth kind of stuff, and just really a lot of fun. And I think this one, the meta aspects of Deadpool just kind of were so meta. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That makes sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
The movie starts off with one of the cliches that I hate about sequel movies. You know, the sole motivation for the male hero is to have the female romantic interest removed. And, you know, to me, that's such a weak choice. But at the same time, Deadpool 2 turns that on its head and acknowledges that they're doing that thing, you know, in the credits, it's like, oh my God, did they just kill her? I can't believe they just did that, you know, and they kind of take that trope and use it and then flip it. And I think there was other ways they could have done it, but considering the ending of it, it doesn't matter anyway.
Right.
That was my problem with it at first. I was like, oh, they're going to kill her off, and now it's going to be another vengeance movie of him getting back at whoever.
Sure.
But then it ended up turning around and being something totally different.
And we had kind of talked before Jake got here about how similar it looks to the comics when he was visiting her in that afterworld, how similar it kind of looks to him in the comics visiting Lady Death and stuff. So it just makes me wonder.
They're aware of their source material.
Right. If they're going to, and like, keep her as a character just in like some nether,
I should hope so.
Nether realm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I believe she gets powers. Her character gets powers in the book. I think. I can't remember.
Yeah. A friend of mine was telling me she becomes a fairly pivotal.
Oh,
mutant.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. She has some kind of latent power set. I can't remember what
it is.
She's
Copycat was her name.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Oh. I'm
almost positive that's what it is. I always doubt myself, but I think that's what it is.
Oh, okay. So I'm not guessing anything.
I found myself a number of times in Deadpool, like, kind of getting angry about stuff they were doing, and then, like, in the same very instance going, oh, I understand why they did that.
Right.
So, like, the whole X-Force thing was like, oh, it's such a great buildup, and here we go, we're going to see these guys, and what? The movie needs more Terry Crews, and you just removed him.
Oh, yeah.
How did you hear that?
Didn't he have a different name, though, before they settled on X-Force? Didn't he say a different name that was ridiculous?
No, I think it was... I think
it was going to be, like, non-gender bias.
Well, he said, like, we're progressive, we're non-gender specific, we are X-Force. And then Domino's like, isn't that a little derivative? And he's like, I didn't ask you, Peter.
I'll have to go back and see what I was thinking.
But, I remember seeing... Now, there's a website I used to go to whenever I was having a bad day full of all of Rob Liefeld? I don't know. The artist who made Deadpool. I never know how to pronounce it. All of his worst art, his most egregious anatomical abominations, most horrible everything... And it's incredible. And Shatterstar is one of those characters that I hate every aspect of. And so when I saw him in the movie, I was like, no way they're doing this. How are they going to make him acceptable? Oh, it's by grinding him up instantly.
I like the nice little Brad Pitt cameo, too.
Yeah, so weird.
Was that
Vanishing?
Okay. Yeah. I'm glad somebody said
it happened so fast. I was like, was that?
Yeah, did like as quickly as I thought, like, is that Brad Pitt? I thought, nah, he ain't doing this. And so
It's Brad.
Well, it's like when Matt Damon cameoed in Thor Ragnarok.
That's right.
And he's in Deadpool 2.
What's that?
Matt Damon is in Deadpool 2.
Really?
Is he?
I missed that.
Yeah, he's one of the two rednecks that cable tasers.
they're talking about their toilet.
That's the what it is.
Manners.
Alan Tudyk.
Was it really? Oh my God.
I have to go back and watch that. I don't remember.
A friend of mine was talking about, like, did you catch the bit with the two guys talking about toilet paper? I'm like, the part where Cable shows up? Like, yeah, did you see what was cool about it? I'm like, I don't know. They got tased. Like, and I saw it twice now. And the second time I was being extra vigilant, I'm like, what's interesting about this? I'm looking in the background. I'm focusing everywhere but those two guys again. And that's what it was.
That's what it was.
Yep.
That was too much looking at two rednecks talking about their toilet manners and how they use toilet paper. It was so funny.
I missed that part.
You get it in, you wipe and do it once time, and then you just pat dry a little bit. Oh, God.
Wonderful. Oh, my God. Okay, it was, how about, I got to ask about Logan, because that was one of my all-time favorites in a long time.
Logan was awesome.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. I mean, when Deadpool opened the door for R-rated films in the superhero genre, I mean, it just made perfect sense. And it's just really well told, that story.
Yeah.
Really, really well done.
I feel bad. I've only seen it the one time.
Oh,
same
really?
Here. Yeah.
Yeah. I've actually been a little bit afraid to go back. I'm like, it was such a good experience. Yeah. Maybe it's better as that one time thing.
Oh, it's just as good.
And man, it's one of those movies that I almost think it's a disservice to call it a comic book movie. Just
it feels like you're watching a Western.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. That's the feel. And it's so on point.
Yeah. Well, and it's
That's the same thing with Captain America Winter Soldier, because it's not a superhero movie.
Yeah.
It's a 70s spy thriller or an espionage movie, really, or one of those things. It's like 3 Days of the Condor. You know, it's one of those type movies. And that's what Logan is. Logan is very definitely a Western. I mean, it's sort of patterned after Shane, and it, you know, it even has Shane in the movie, they just did a really, really good job with it. And to see these characters that, you know, you've loved over the years, you know, deteriorate in such a way is, like, you know, very heartbreaking.
Oh, it hurts.
Sure. And there was a lot of gravity in the theater, like watching him die. Like,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's the first X-Men movie I watched that, like, as I'm watching it and as you see him die, like, not only are you thinking of his path, but you're thinking about, like, oh, man. Like, I immediately thought of the first X-Men movie. Like, going to see it all those years ago and all the movies he's been in since and watching this character evolve and grow, and we're watching him die.
Right? Oh, they knew. They knew you would.
Oh, they played me like fucking violin.
And, you know, it's one of those things that, like, for me personally, it just... I get so upset when things change dramatically in a setting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'll give you... I know you guys aren't big Harry Potter fans. I'm not a huge Harry Potter fan, but I like the movies.
Sure.
Seeing, like, all of these horrible conflicts and stuff befall the school and it getting, like, physically deteriorated hurts for me. I'm like, no, everything was so perfect and magical. Yeah. So it's one of those things where when you see the end of something, the finality of a particular storyline... I can't handle it. I'm like, no, it can't be real. It can't end. And I just can't deal with
change. When Dobby died, it hit me pretty hard.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you're like, no.
I hated that thing. I was so glad when that thing died. So glad. But, I never understood the parents in that world. I mean, all the shit that's happened at Hogwarts, they're still parents so eager just to ship their kids off.
Barely call them parents as irresponsible as they must be. Hey, there's a magical death terrorist.
Is that commentary on the real world?
Maybe.
What we're going through in this country right now? I mean, you know.
Not too far off, is it?
The whole concept. Oh, man. It's like instead of sending them to elementary school, they send them to a rifle range where they learn how to handle an array of deadly weapons.
Oh, my God.
Well, that's the school for gifted mutants, right?
Yeah, seriously. School for weaponized children. Let's just call it what it is.
Yeah. Boy, I still have a mighty list of movies here, but the time is dwindling. So I think we had a touch on, before we move on, the DC contributions to the world since we last spoke to you, David. And one of which was fantastic. Wonder Woman has kind of been like the beautiful flower to grow out of crap. You know what I mean? Yeah. It, 'cause those other ones haven't been great. What do you think of Justice League, David?
Because Man of Steel and Batman versus Superman left a bad taste in my mouth. I didn't have any sort of expectations for Justice League, and actually, it was okay. I sat through it and I watched it, and I've watched it twice since then, simply because it's a superhero movie, and I like to watch those things. And I mean, it's got problems, but. It wasn't terrible. I mean, just the same way that I feel like Green Lantern wasn't... Green Lantern was no Fantastic Four, okay?
Right.
That's true.
There are some fun things about Green Lantern, one of them being Ryan Reynolds, because he's just a fun actor. But as far as Justice League, I mean... It was perfectly serviceable. The problem is that Warner Brothers has not handled that universe very well, and they're stumbling and fumbling and trying to make up ground that they can't make up ground. The Marvel universe is so far ahead that they, in my opinion, I think they should just stop trying and just concentrate on telling good stories. That's what you
need. Absolutely.
Well, that would get them to where they want to be anyway, quicker than what they're trying to do. They've got a
threefold problem. You know, they're trying to play the same game Marvel is, without the patience to learn it first.
Sure.
They're chopping up their movies and putting them back together in ways that make almost no sense. I feel like the best parts of those movies are on the cutting room floor, and what we get is almost incoherent. and they don't make compelling villains. And I think that's the biggest of the three.
Well, that's the thing for me. I mean, the stakes, there were no stakes in Justice League. I knew right from the beginning that they were going to win.
Yeah.
It was just a matter of them going through the motions and getting the point. And they suffered, the Justice League movie suffered this from the same problem that the Wonder Woman movie did, is that I didn't care about the villain.
Yeah.
Yep.
Did not care at all.
Yeah.
And I don't understand what it is about movies like, and this applies to Marvel too, but the DC universe as well. It's like, if you have what you claim to be deities in your universe, they just remove them as quickly as possible. They write them out, or they turn them into like an alien race or something like that. You know, they try to get away from the divine aspect of them as quickly as possible and say, well, that's not really what they are, rather than sort of doing what would be a better, more acceptable situation, was like, the gods just don't care.
Yeah.
You know, the Zeus and his pantheon have retreated to Mount Olympus, and they just don't care. They're not going to pay attention to anything that happens on Earth at all. And you know, to have Ares kill off everybody in the Greek pantheon, that just, to me, that was a bad choice. But I mean,
yeah.
I'm not writing these things, so what can I do?
And, you know, that same point, I think one of the things that really worked for Wonder Woman, at least at the start, was that the events of the movie happened independent of the villain. The threat of Ares was just this vague thing that got her motivated, and I think that's what was best about it. And I think it was incredible when you reach this moment where she kills Ludendorff, and it's like, oh, there's no Ares. And something we all kind of knew, and then she's got to come to terms with. I thought that was perfect, and then they cheapened it by bringing in a big, large-horned CG villain for her to fight. I was like, no, you had this great thing going. You know, it made perfect sense.
Yeah.
But,
and going back to Black Panther and Infinity War, Black Panther kind of suffers from the same sort of villain problem that a lot of these superhero movies is, you know, the villain and the hero are basically mirrors of each other. They're either both really super strong or super fast or whatever. And that was Ares in the Wonder Woman movie. I mean, you know, he's a god, she's a goddess, and they're just going to beat each other until one of them wins. And Killmonger and Black Panther were kind of, you know, they both had the same suit on, so they were both evenly matched, and it just came down to luck and so forth. But, you know, but then you get to Thanos and he's the unstoppable force. You know, you won't be reckoned with, you know, he won't be listened to and that kind of thing. So, you know, I would really like to see one of these movies do these things where the hero and the villain are not opposites of each other. They're, you know, something other than that, but,
yeah, so similar, like, you can't tell them apart.
Yeah.
Couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. Any closing thoughts on?
No, I think I've said my piece.
Okay. I looked at the clock and I'm like, holy cow!
Yeah, it's easy to get carried away. What has become like the big cultural thing this decade?
We've only touched half the list. There's some other many movies I'd love to talk about, but there is one.
Oh,
we got to touch on really quick. What?
I was just going to say, like, if I've got a closing thought, it's that for all our complaints and comparing this and that, boy, it's a great time to be into comic books or movies.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. And into Power Rangers.
Seriously.
Because that's one movie we didn't touch on that I don't think was out since we last spoke with you.
That's true. Yeah, it came out in 2017, right?
Yep. Yeah, what'd you think?
I really enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun with it. It was very strange to be sitting in the audience and hearing the name Zordon over and over and nobody looking. you know, when they had announced that Bryan Cranston was going to play Zordon, I was like, oh, that's awesome. They chose somebody of his caliber, and it gave the character some seriousness and some weight. And I really liked the way the character was portrayed, and I like the fact that he was a jerk at the beginning, and was just so focused on solving the problem that, you know, he wasn't that sort of fatherly mentor that the TV show had. But then he redeems himself, you know, at the crucial moment in the movie. And I thought the kids were all well cast. R.J. Seiler as Billy was just the heart and soul of that. And Rita was scary. I miss the boxy Zords and the Megazord.
Yeah. Yes, definitely.
Yeah, true.
I wanted my monkey face Goldar to be there, but hey, a big giant monster made of gold, I guess. I love the fact that they backslapped her to the moon. I thought that was hilarious. I wish they would have gotten to them being in the suits sooner. I wish we would have seen them kind of escalate, you know, the conflict with Rita rather than just a big showdown at the end. You know, seeing them, you know, and Austin and a number of other Rangers have pointed out, you know, they missed it when they said it's morphing time. It went by so quietly and so quickly that it wasn't like the show where, you know, this was the moment, you know, it's morphing time. And the music was only there for a little bit and then disappeared. And, but overall, I thought it was a good reworking for the time period.
Exactly.
I think that's the consensus. People were kind of blindsided by it. You think like, oh,
I certainly was.
It's a bit of a cash grab, right? It's like it's a known franchise. They're just trying to cash in on it. But
I didn't expect it to like blow me away, but I didn't expect it to be bad. I expected mediocre. Like,
yeah, it's a movie, but
I was really blown away with how well they did with it. Because I mean, you have to expect some level of, you know, cheesiness or camp somewhere. But they took it and they did it so well.
They did. Yeah. They gave a damn about it.
They did.
When it would have been so easy not to. So
DC
that
could learn something from the Power Rangers. Right. But well, I just wanted to ask your opinion on that. I've been dying to know. And one thing I want to do really quick here is just do a quick shout out first to Brooke's cousin, Oliver Ono, who just this last weekend they had a big yard sale and he got rid of a lot of his old toys. And boy, did he hand me down just a plethora of amazing Power Ranger toys. I collect toys, as many of our listeners know. So I got a couple different Megazords, a few of these actual old Rangers from back in the early 90s. Yeah, very exciting stuff. But one of the things that was in the box here was, do you guys remember Golden Books growing up?
Oh, mm-hmm. Sure do.
There's a Golden Book Mighty Morphin Power Rangers story here called Food Fight. And this is one of the books that you guys, I don't know if they still make these, they probably do, but one of the books that has a strip of buttons down the side that as you're reading your story, you can push for sound effects to enhance your story. And one of these buttons here, David, has your face on it, a cartoon version of Zordon's face right on it. And so I went and bought batteries and put them in here, and I've listened to some of the other buttons, but have not listened to Zordon yet, because I thought we could all listen with
you. Haven't listened to it yet?
No.
Oh, man.
The anticipation's killing me.
Yeah.
Oh, me too, because some of these other ones don't sound too bad. I'll play some of them here for the listeners. Yeah, this one just has the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers logo on it. That sounds pretty good,
yeah,
right?
It's not bad.
Here's
Rita's.
Rita's, yeah. Here's Rita. Are you able to hear those, David?
Yeah, yeah.
Perfect.
I don't know what the idea behind that one was, but
well, I mean, she did a lot of yeah-ing.
That's
high. Yeah. So here's one that shows the Rangers all flipping in the air.
That's actually my ringtone.
So, okay. So the technology is pretty
good. It's not bad, all things considered.
It's not beeps and boops.
But we've got to know.
All right. Who would like to? Does somebody want to do the pleasure?
I think
should I just?
You've been this patient with it. You're within, you know, arm's reach.
All right. Here we go. The Zordon button.
Oh, it's not even Zordon.
Wow. Are you freaking serious?
What a phenomenal
list. Was that really you?
That sounded like the command center. I don't know if it was me or not, but
what the hell, man?
Oh no.
Oh, I was so expecting Rangers. Oh boy, I picked this up and dropped this down. I'm sorry, gentlemen.
My day's ruined.
Oh well. Unless, David, you make that noise for us really quick and make it sound really close.
Rangers, teleport to the command center immediately.
Hey, there we go. That's the button.
Yeah.
That's the button.
So did you pick up a copy of Oddities? Did you pick up a copy yet?
Not yet, no. We have a convention coming up here in the next
About three weeks.
Yeah. Source Point Press. We've actually talked to a bunch of people from Source Point Press, and some of our friends with Source Point are going to be there. So mm-hmm. I'm hoping to pick up a hard copy there. But let's just move right into talking about it. I wanted to first say how pleasantly surprised I was to find out that Buddy Holly and the Cold, Cold Ground is one of the stories in this book.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, once Cool Beans went under, sadly, and there were no longer going to be copies of it available, I got the rights to it back, and so I was trying to figure out a way to include it in some way and to get it back out there. And I had considered just putting together these stories and then self-publishing it like I did with my superhero novel, but Josh Warner and the guys over at Source Point said, well, we'd love to put it out for you. And so over the last 2 years or so, it's been with them going through the editing process and the formatting process, and it finally got released. So I was very happy about that.
Source Point, we were talking before we record the episode that we started dealing with Source Point Press, what, 2014?
It's probably about 3.5 years ago.
So. And just how they've come around, how they've grown.
Man, is there anyone in the comics world busier than Source Point right now?
Yeah, when I hooked up with those guys, like in I think it was 2011, 2012, they just had like their Jack of Spades and a couple of other things, and then they did that rampant novel, and then we did the werewolf anthology that they did, and so they're just a bunch of great guys. I really like them.
And they just recently took on Bob Sally, who does the comic Salvagers, which mm-hmm. is amazing book. So
they're kicking ass these days.
They are. They're kicking ass.
Don't they have something to do with Rotten Tail? And there's a film adaptation of
what was it, like Hollister or something?
No, they got Hollister, which was a TV series on fear.net or whatever that web channel was. But Rotten Tail is a take on Peter Cottontail, something like that, I think it was.
Was it? I don't remember that.
But it was going to be a movie with, I can't remember the guy's name, but he played Parker Lewis Can't Lose back in the 90s.
Yeah, the makeup that they showed on that guy was just fantastic.
So. I saw a picture today, it is pretty awesome.
I'll have to look at it. No, I haven't seen that. So just really quick, before we get too far away from it, can you just give the listeners a brief description of what Oddities is?
Yeah, it's a collection of three stories. So it's an odd number where the title comes from, Oddities. It's three stories that two of which have been in my notebooks for over 30 years that I finally just, got off my tail and finished them. And then rounds off with the republished version of Buddy Holly and the Cold, Cold Ground. The first one is called Willie Conklin's Last Snipe. It's a story about a group of kids, sort of in the vein of a Stephen King-ish Stand By Me kind of story, but told from the point of view of the bad guys, not the good kids. And the second story, Bad Animals, is a vampire story that started off as a short story that I had an idea for in college that actually turned into a short film that we made in college. And then I took the story and took it away from the scripted version and made it, fleshed it out more and added elements to it and turned it into a full-length novella. So you've got a story about bullies that ends badly. You've got vampires, and then you've got ghosts. So it's a trio of supernatural stories.
I'll take it.
You, I know for a fact you really dig the Buddy Holly and the Cold, Cold Ground
story.
David, thanks again for letting me read that.
Now, oh, yeah, yeah.
You mentioned that you have put final touches on that for this book. Is the version I read any at all different from the one that's now published in this book?
There is. There's a little bit that's changed at the end. Not anything to do with the story itself, but some of the things that Lincoln talks about after it's all over have been changed. I know it's not any spoiler or anything like that, but he talks about a musician from Austin named Bob Schneider. I don't know if you guys are familiar with him. No. Bob Schneider has a song. The title of the song is King Kong, which has nothing to do with what's actually in the song, but it's very pertinent to what actually happens to Lincoln in that story. So I don't have any rights to any of the lyrics, so I wasn't able to add it into the song, but just mentioning I think is okay. Nobody's going to sue me over that. So
how many times I've thought that very thing making this show? Well, they can't sue me over that.
Times we've hoped that very thing. Yeah.
Now, when we had spoken before about the story, you'd mentioned that you were wanting to further Lincoln Bright's story. And I'm curious, do any of these other stories contain him, or is Buddy Holly and the Cold, Cold Ground the only Lincoln Bright story in this book?
That's the only Lincoln Bright story in the book, but Lincoln's adventures are continuing and will be out next year.
Awesome.
Oh, nice. Will that be on the Source Point label as well, you think?
No, that's with another publisher.
I see. You'll have to keep us in the loop. I
definitely
really like to read that.
I'm a sucker for continuity.
Right.
Anytime I can see something feed into a new story, I'm like,
universe building.
You got me.
Yeah, right. Now, I know people can get this on Amazon.com, also SourcePointPress.com. Is there anywhere else I should be directing people?
Barnes & Noble has it as well.
Barnes & Noble. All right. I'll write that down. Another thing I wanted to touch with you on quick, too. The last time we had you on, we had spoken about a movie that yourself and Karen Ashley had been working on, The Order. How's the production coming on that?
It was stalled last January because there were some issues with SAG, the Screen Actors Guild. We were 4 days from getting in front of the cameras to get everything going, and they stepped in and shut the production down over some rules violations or something like that. So it was very disappointing for us to have everybody out there and ready to go, and then it just stopped. And a lot of the money that Karen raised, she had to return to the investors because of those rules that SAG was about. But Karen and I and the rest of everybody else is still committed to getting that going. And Karen plans to get it back up this November or December. And there's going to be something in the news very shortly that has an Order tie into it. So be on the lookout for that. It's not dead. It's still very much alive. But we just don't have anything that we can put out there for the public to consume at this time. But sure. that will change shortly.
Well, we eagerly await.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, what do they say? When people are fighting back, you can usually be sure you're moving in the right direction.
Right.
Well, I can't wait. Again, keep us in the loop on that as well. And again, to people at home, BarnesandNoble.com, Amazon.com, SourcePointPress.com, all these different places you can get the book Oddities by David J. Fielding. And be sure to leave reviews on the websites when and if you do. David, I want to thank you so much for being back on the show with us. Is there anything else we should be mentioning before we leave?
No, I mean, you guys are always such a great group to talk to, and I love being on the show, and thank you for having me. I appreciate that very much.
Oh, we love having you on. Yeah. Yeah, we'll get you that free sub, too.
Absolutely.
Where are you guys based out of?
We're in Columbus.
Okay.
Do you ever get over this way at all?
I'm hoping to. There was some talk about Indie Pop Con, and then I forget the other one, but I mean, there was some talk about it. We'll get together at some point. I know we'll
be there.
Nice. Yeah, it'd be awesome to catch up for sure. Awesome. Well, thanks again, man.
You bet.
Jack, what do we have on the website?
Go to CandairPodcast.com, or you can check out our special guests, listen to the show, follow us on all our social media, visit the Hall of Heroes, check out some of the videos from our YouTube page, click on the merch button and get some merch. And if you have any comments or complaints or If you'd like to be a guest on the show, send us an email on our contacts page.
And once more, on Twitter, we are at CandairPod, and you should absolutely follow our guest as well, at David J. Fielding. And then head down to Instagram, where you can find us at canned_air.
Very nice, very nice. And I was trying to do a shout-out earlier for Brooke's cousin, who hooked me up with all this cool Power Ranger stuff and afforded us the privilege of hearing beeps and boops there. But Oliver Ono, he is a fantastic artist. I cannot tell you how good this guy is. He, 1 year for Christmas, gave Brooke a picture of a picture she had taken. I thought it was just an enlargement. It was an actual, like, painting.
Oh, that's wild.
It looked that good. Like, I thought it was just a print on canvas. Guys, fantastic. Head over to Instagram, just at Oliver Ono, or go to oliverono.com. Check out his work. Promise you won't regret it. And anything else? Again, Wizard World. You want 10% off those tickets? Use Candair, no space, at checkout.
All and caps this time.
I think he was saying
it'll just type in caps
automatically.
No matter,
like, does. Oh, okay. It, so.
Good, because I kind of missed the lowercase no space thing. Yeah. We had
I do too. It was catchy. Yeah. It was catchy in the commercial where the kid gets punched in the face.
Yeah.
And
oh, that was a good time.
I might leave it in there.
You should.
I might leave it in there, but I think that's going to do it for this week. So until next time, I'm Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
I'm Jake Runyon.
And I'm David J. Fielding, Zordo.
Oh, I love it.
Awesome.
Tingles every time.
Every time, yep.
Thanks so much, everyone.
From outside.
Blowtorch!
Whenever there's a fire in your house, be sure to get outside immediately. And once outside, get on CandairPodcast.com.
Well, thanks for the tip, Blowtorch, but just one question. What about the fire?
And no one is half the battle.
G.I. Joe!
Boy, we have a chopper flying over real low.
There's a bombing run out. So.
Let's wait for him to pass.
Head on down to Twitter, where you can find us as... That's weirdly phrased. Let me try that one more time.
Sure.
Gosh.
If you want more Canned Air, head to Twitter. We are at Canned Air Pod. You can find all of our links, shows... Man, I am off my game today. So
you're good.
Give me one more second.
Third time's a charm.
Yeah, here it is. Excuse me, I'm like...
They kind of...
I'm Ken Harbaugh, host of Warriors in Their Own Words, a podcast that presents the unvarnished, unsanitized truth of what we have asked of those who defend this nation. As a country, we need these stories more than ever. Stories from Americans who have borne the battle, including 30-year-old remastered interviews with veterans from World War I recounting their time in the trenches of Europe, and with veterans from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and from our most recent conflicts in Iraq, Afghanistan, and other battlefields Americans may never have heard of. Hear their stories by listening to Warriors in Their Own Words wherever you find podcasts.